Welcome to the 21st show. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and for Brian Mackey, who is away today. We're less than a month away from the midterm elections, a big test of our country's political system. A changing political landscape and the rise of extremism and misinformation has tainted the trust of some in our electoral system. One of the voices trying to make it make sense of it all by sticking to the facts, he joins us today in studio. Domenico Montanaro is the senior political editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington, D.C. desk. And tonight, he'll join a panel of other political journalists hosted by the Richard and Leslie Frank Center for Leadership and Innovation in Media at the University of Illinois College of Media. Welcome to the 21st, Domenico.
Reginald, thanks for having me on.
And Domenico will be with us for much of today's program. So if you have any questions about the upcoming midterm election, give us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at The 21st Show. So as we go to air this morning, we are about an hour away from what may be the final hearing of the January 6th committee. You'll most likely hear it on your NPR station here in Illinois. The congressional committee includes only two Republicans, Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. Domenico, you know, as we look at these hearings, there's been a lot brought up about, kind of the violence and it's probing where President Trump's role in that, former President Trump. What are you hearing about this and the impact on the midterms?
Well, this is the last hearing that they've had. I think that this one is really intended to sort of make the closing argument, the summation of what they've kind of compiled over these last several months. It is really interesting to see this coming, less than a month until all the ballots have to be cast in this midterm election. At the same time, it doesn't appear that it's making much of an impact as far as moving voters from conservative side of things, not as much. Because when you look at surveys talking about, who's paying attention to these, it's mostly Democrats who are watching the hearings. It has had some impact, and we saw some movement earlier in the summer, where it seemed like Trump's ironclad grip on the Republican Party was loosening a bit. But ironically, with the search at his home at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, it seemed to kind of snap back and rally the base around Trump when, in an alternative universe, you might imagine that if a person that you liked was having their home searched for classified materials, you might think, maybe I don't necessarily like that guy as much, or maybe we have some risks that we don't want to have to take. But that the opposite has happened when it comes to Trump. And he's really been able to kind of take a hold on the Republican Party, but I do think that the more that he's out of office, the more that these hearings sort of chip away at his, the things that he did leading up to January 6th, the more people who come forward who are Republicans who served in his White House or in his administration saying, here's what he knew, here's what happened. It's sort of harder for him to make this case that it was just a peaceful protest or something, or like when he's in Nevada saying it's the largest crowd he'd ever seen, and nobody pays attention to that. It was far more serious than that, obviously.
As we mentioned, Representative Kinzinger is part of the committee, and he told WGN-TV that he seems to be a Republican with no party. Here's what he told WGN in August.
The truth is, this party is Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's not the party that I ever joined. It's around a person, and it's kind of creepy, to be honest with you.
So are you hearing similar sentiments from Republicans who don't favor Trump? And, a lot of them have been bounced from their offices, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when you look at the 10 people who voted for Trump's impeachment, for example, almost all of them lost or have retired because they didn't want to face, a difficult primary. So it has made their lives more difficult to oppose Trump. There are a lot of Republicans, and you continue to hear over and over again, privately, Republicans will say X, Y, Z, but they know that Trump has a real hold on the base culturally. And what Republican strategists tell me is that there really hasn't been a sustained effort by Republicans to offer an alternative vision to Trump rather than just ceding sort of the megaphone to him. And they think that that's a big problem for why there hasn't been a movement away from him necessarily. But he definitely continues to have this kind of hold, as Kinzinger's alluding to. And there are a lot of Republicans who, you know, feel like they're able to say, January 6th was a bad thing. The president, the former president, inspired it, certainly, and that doesn't need to be the case and could have been changed, and that they could, for conservative values, go in a different direction with somebody with less drama. And of course, a lot of them start to point to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis because he's a more disciplined version of Trump, for example, can still carry the sort of culture war stuff, but not have the sort of chaos that surrounds his White House. But, you know, right now, people are still looking at the fact that Trump, because he has another term potentially to serve as president, that he and his legacy he wants to burnish. He is the front runner still to run for that nomination.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington, D.C. desk. He is joining political journalists from CNN, The Wall Street Journal, and the Chicago Tribune at a symposium to discuss what it's like to cover politics and elections in 2022. It will take place tonight at the Knight Auditorium of the Spurlock Museum on the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana campus at 6. There's also a virtual option, because we know a lot of you are listening across the state, and we have a link at 21stshow.org. And if you want to ask a question to Domenico right now, you can call us at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. I have one more question about former President Donald Trump. You know, as we know, the FBI searched his home at Mar-a-Lago in Florida in August, seizing about 11,000 documents, including many marked as classified. Is there any new information on this case? And again, is that swaying independent voters, do you think, will have an impact?
Well, there was some new reporting from The Washington Post and NBC News and others over the last day or so that Trump had directed some folks to move boxes, that the FBI is actually talking to one of his former employees who had sort of changed his story to originally saying Trump had no role to then saying that Trump had directed them, which they think might help prove some degree of intent on the part of the former president. Where this winds up going and how much longer this winds up going is going to be interesting to watch, because if this starts to bleed into, you know, the next half of 2023 or beyond, you know, you're looking at a time when people start to announce for president in 2024. I mean, you remember, President Biden announced in, I believe it was April of the year before the presidential election. This is really when you start to see in the next several months people start to run, and that really could have some impact if there's this cloud hanging over the former president. And he's not just dealing with this, you know, investigation from the Justice Department. I mean, there are investigations in New York. There's an investigation in Georgia. There are a lot of different legal avenues and legal difficulties that the former president has found himself in.
Let's shift here to Illinois, and Democratic incumbent J.B. Pritzker faces Republican challenger Darren Bailey, a state senator endorsed by former President Donald Trump. I wonder if people are watching this race nationally, and I understand they also there's a trend that Pritzker kind of participated in, if you will.
Well, I feel like I should be asking you about the Illinois races, but when it comes to the governor's race, I mean, you know, there's the idea that Pritzker was trying to prop up the Republican that he's running against, Bailey. And that is something that is a national trend. We've seen that that Democrats have tried to sort of get through a Republican primary or help to someone that they think is not, as strong a candidate to run against them, which obviously looks like Pritzker has tried to do that with his candidate, with the Republican candidates running against him here. But in Michigan's 3rd congressional district, there was a Republican who was backed by former President Trump, John Gibbs, who Democrats ran ads during the Republican primary saying he's too conservative for this district. He's Trump's best friend. Now, people would say, well, what's wrong with that? It's not factually inaccurate, but it did help Gibbs, who had less name identification, who denies the election, by the way, the election results of 2020, saying that Trump won the election when clearly that's not true, didn't happen. Courts have proved that over and over again. But that did help him kind of gain name identification. Democrats did it as well in New Hampshire in the Senate race there. And everyone's looking for any advantage they can, right? I mean, we're talking about races that could be decided by a couple of points. And, you know, each side is going to try to look for their advantage. And, you know, I've heard Democrats defend this and say, you know, look, my job is to help Democrats win. That was Sean Patrick Maloney, who, you know, runs the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is responsible for trying to get Democrats to win the House and boost those Democratic candidates. Others say, you know, it's a dangerous game that you're playing. Kinzinger has said that, you know, Peter Meyer, who wound up losing in that third congressional district seat, somebody who voted against or voted for Trump's impeachment, you know, who wound up losing his race, you know, saying the Democrats are playing a dangerous game because in this hyper-polarized era, people do start with 45% to 47%. You know, I think if you put a T-shirt on that was R or D on a dog, people would probably run, you know, would vote for that because they say, well, it's better than having the alternative. So that's kind of what we're seeing here. And if Democrats do win those places, it'll be reinforcing for them to say it was the right call.
I'm struck by how much money is continuing to pile up in all these races. And, it, you know, Pritzker is a billionaire. And, you know, I wonder, you know, and a lot of that money that he used to help run ads in the primary that kind of benefited Darren Bailey, you know, came from his own pocket. I mean, are you just, you know, is it just becoming a race where anybody has to be rich to run? Almost.
Well, you know, gubernatorial races are a little bit different too because the federal rules for you know, campaign donations are very different. I mean, they don't apply, right? So each state makes their own rules. A state like Illinois, you know, is he can pour in a lot of his own money to do that. But yeah, I mean, look, anytime I talk to campaigns, they're really happy to have a rich guy run because they don't have to try to help prop these folks up. I mean, you look at sort of what Mitch McConnell's group, he's the Senate Republican leader, has had to do for a candidate in Ohio, for example, the Republican J.D. Vance there, who'd been struggling in the polls, is pouring in about $30 million to have to raise money from all kinds of different people to try to just get him over the finish line. So when you have somebody who's wealthy, a lot of times, and particularly Republicans will tell me, okay, you know, he's going to self-fund, so we don't have to worry about that race. They're just sort of checking off the boxes on each on the map. Now, what it means for, you know, openness in politics, transparency, and how much money is poured in, who's owed what favors, you know, that's a place that makes it a little bit more complicated, especially when we're looking at the fact that the Supreme Court essentially said it's okay for corporations to donate to campaigns and basically open the floodgates, and the Federal Election Commission really doesn't have a lot of teeth to be able to say, if you violate these rules, here's what's going to happen to you.
We've got about 3 minutes till the first break, and I want to ask you, what congressional races here in Illinois are you keeping an eye on?
I know we're in the 13th congressional district here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Champaign, Urbana, right. Decatur, Springfield, into the Metro East.
And, you know, redistricting is really sort of thrown everything for a loop across the country. I mean, this is one of those districts. I know they brought in some East St. Louis votes to sort of draw right along a really thin line across the state to kind of pick up Democratic votes to give Democrats one more potential seat, especially in a time when Illinois lost a congressional district. You know, the legislature looking to sort of figure out ways to maneuver that to help, you know, their party, which is what happens throughout the country. I mean, you know, Republicans have gotten a lot of attention for that, but that's because they run a lot more state legislatures than Democrats do currently. But this race, you know, is one that leans Democratic right now. If you look at the Cook Political Report, which does some of those prognostications, so, you know, they've made this seat a little bit more Democratic. So it looks like the Democrat here right now is favored to win that race. I've been interested in more of an adjacent race, the Illinois 17th Congressional district, which stretches from, I think, Rockford down to Peoria and has a sort of more of a rural and agricultural plus a suburban streak. And the two candidates there are just very, very different people. Right. I mean, Eric Sorensen, who's a weatherman, you know, a local meteorologist who would be the first openly gay member from Illinois, runs this sort of sunny campaign, if you will, speaking about the weather, and running against Esther Joy
King,
who, you know, has not is a very different sort of candidate than he is, and has been sort of hammering President Biden, hammering Democrats over inflation, but has dealt with some issues of resume embellishment that Democrats have tried to hit her on. So a real culture clash, a real clash of characters in that one.
Right. She is a lawyer and a former JAG officer in the Army Reserve. And the 13th includes Nikki Bensinski, who was an aide to both Pritzker and Biden, and Reagan Deering, Republican, former educator. Well, we will continue talking to Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent, on the other side of the break. And again, he is here on the campus of the University of Illinois to take part in a symposium with other political journalists. And we have a link to that at the21stshow.org. We'll take more of your questions if you have any. So call us at 800-222-9455 or tweet us at 21stshow.org. Or 21st show. That's our handle. And we'll be back from the 21st right after this. We are talking with Domenico Montanaro, and welcome back to the 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick, in for Brian Mackey. And Domenico Montanaro is the senior political editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington Desk. He is joining political journalists from CNN, The Wall Street Journal, and the Chicago Tribune at a symposium to discuss what it's like to cover politics and elections in 2022. And that symposium will take place at the Knight Auditorium of the Spurlock Museum on the U of I campus tonight at 6 if you want to come in person. There's also a link to watch the panel virtually, and we have that at 21stshow.org. I want to pivot here and ask you about your own personal pathway to covering elections and politics. What was that journey? I understand you're a New Yorker, right?
I am, yeah, and I think I was always kind of a political junkie and didn't really kind of realize it. I thought that people just all paid attention to, like, congressional hearings when they were, like, in fourth grade, which obviously they didn't. I remember it was my brother's 21st birthday. He was at the University of Albany. I'm older than him, and I went up there to visit. But his birthday is November 3rd, and November 3rd, 2004 was his birthday. That was, but it also happened to be Bush's reelection, you know, for the election day. So, but you know, 21st birthday, we know what that can be like on college campus, right? We didn't even go out. Like, we just stayed in. We brought in like the three TVs from the house. We like watched all the networks. We had like whiteboards going, like trying to figure out like who was going to make what call first and all that stuff. So it was just always a thing that I was always kind of into, you know, and I, you know, grew up in New York. I went to the University of Delaware. I worked on the student paper quite a bit. I worked at a local newspaper, and then I actually taught high school English for 3 years and, you know, decided to kind of go back after that and got my master's, saw the industry changing, sort of tried to make myself Swiss Army knife. You know, I can try to write for digital, you know, I'm in all podcast now, which is a new thing, right? That sort of popped up in the last few years. You know, been on television, learned how to edit for radio, you know, that all that stuff, all totally new. But I think it's like everyone's going to need information, right? Everyone's always going to need, you know, people with sources to tell them what might be happening or what's really going on. And however we convey that, you know, I think we need to be able to be mobile and agile to be able to change with the times and be able to express that information, give the right context to people. And it was always a thing that I was just super into and, you know, moved to D.C., became a researcher at NBC News, and, you know, just kind of moved in different directions. I wasn't like a back of the car NPR kid. My parents were more, you know, ABC Peter Jennings, you know, family growing up in the 80s. And but I discovered NPR when I was a teacher and really liked it a lot and always thought, they really do good journalism. It'd be really interesting to work there. So I'm still kind of surprised and shocked and humbled that, you know, people care at all what I want to say, especially about politics, which always to me just happened to be a thing that I was interested in, talked about, curious about. But I think it's really important because politics is what we have as far as how, you know, laws are created, the direction of the country you want to go in. People can be very jaded, and it's understandable people can be jaded. But, you know, if people vote, the majority, you know, wins or rules. I mean, redistricting aside, you know, if you get to control the agenda, you have to participate in the process. And, you know, I don't think that that's choosing a side in one way or another, except for engagement. I do think that it's important for people to be engaged, to understand what's happening in the world, because it matters to your life and the kinds of rules and kinds of roles that happen going forward. I mean, I was a little surprised, you know, when obviously former President Trump, you know, was able to put through three Supreme Court justices. And then when things happen, you know, you hear from some people who then sort of blame President Biden for things. And it's just like, okay, well, that's not exactly why or how that works. You know, you have to be able to control the levers of power to be able to get the people through that you want to be on that side. And sometimes that means compromise. It means, you know, not getting the things, everything that you want. And there's all kinds of ways that people argue about how to best fire up voters. But what's the best way to get people to turn out? Should you be more moderate? Should you be more boldly progressive? And I think all of those things are fascinating and interesting. And I want to be there, part of it, listening and covering it.
Your story early about watching the political events, you know, reminds me of a younger person of myself. I was the only probably elementary school kid in Colorado that watched the political conventions from gavel to gavel when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's something else. That's why no one liked us, right?
Right. A Pew Research poll says trust in national news organizations among Republicans dropped from 70 to 35% between 2016 and 2021. Among Democrats that lean, or those that leaned Democratic, they have 78% trust in the media. How does that lack of trust impact, you know, reporting or trying to get at the heart of the story, the political, in the voice of the voter?
Yeah, that's a really sad situation. I mean, it's obviously something I'm highly aware of. I mean, you know, I think that there's been a concerted effort. I mean, you know, every president tries to go around the filter. You know, they don't like to have to, you know, go through the gauntlet of press coverage. But, you know, what we've seen in the last few years has been different. I mean, you know, with former President Trump, unfortunately, you know, really taking on the press, calling us enemy of the people. And it's really sad because we, you know, we really don't have an agenda going into these things. I mean, I think our agenda is our North Star is the truth. And, you know, I have kids and I always say sometimes what's fair isn't always equal. And, you know, I don't think that's biased. I think that that is just telling the truth, trying to be as accurate and fair as possible. Now, we're going to make mistakes. I think that it's honorable to have people who own up to their mistakes and put corrections on stories. Corrections on stories should not be a thing that people look at and say, aha, see? No, that's what you should look at and say, oh, wow, look, there's somebody who, you know, really thinks about their work and their craft and that they can say when they did something wrong, which is unlike a lot of people, to be honest. And I think that it's really a sad situation. I think that there's a lot of people who kind of misjudge and misunderstand how we do our jobs. And I really wish they were able to know how we went about it, because it's not that complicated. We try to look at the facts as they are, try to then evaluate, independently verify those facts, and not jump to conclusions. keep an open mind. And though when we are able to independently verify facts, that we stick to them and are able to call people when they get them wrong and say, no, I'm sorry, that's not actually true. We have to be able to do that. And I think in a robust way, it's important for us, for democracy, and for our government.
We have a few text messages from our texting club. Stephen in Urbana asks, why have the media failed to ask the hard follow-up questions to politicians who mostly give self-serving gloss over responses?
Well, I mean, you know, the media is a big thing. I mean, so, you know, I'm always happy to sort of defend or, you know, look at specific interviews or things that I've done. You know, I think that it's an important thing that the media do need to do. You know, interviewers, I think it's a difficult thing to do, to be very well read, to understand the nuances of different topics, and to be able to then hold people accountable when they say things that are false. I think that it's one thing that we have to have our ears up about, to say we don't want to have something air that's false. And if it does, we want to come back to that to be able to say, actually, audience and listeners, here's what the truth was. But, you know, pinning down politicians is not an easy thing. And it's why a lot of people, you know, get, you know, into that profession. They get paid a lot of money at the highest levels if you're really good at it, right? Because those folks are also well-heeled. They're, you know, media trained. They know what they're doing, and they know what the facts that they can use to spin. And I think it's up to us to continue to hone our craft to be able to, you know, try to hold them to account.
And from Champaign, wrote us, I am very concerned about the midterms. The rise in support of authoritarianism is puzzling. I am also concerned about the decline of integrity and fall into fantasy that has happened in my family's beloved Republican Party. The question would be, is democracy in as much peril as we hear if the U.S. Senate would lose its Democratic majority?
Well, I mean, I don't know about like one party or the other necessarily in control of whether democracy would be in peril. You know, I do think that obviously, you know, former President Trump has had quite the hold on the Republican Party. It's been, you know, obviously, you know, he's defending his role on January 6th, which, you know, a lot of Republicans have said and said right after January 6th that he was taking an improper role, that he wasn't doing the right things, and yet now have kind of backed away from those things. I mean, the House minority leader, who's likely to be speaker if Republicans take over, Kevin McCarthy, obviously criticized the former president at the outset and now has kind of backtracked on that in basically a quest to become speaker. And, you know, if he winds up becoming speaker, he'll feel like that was the right decision because it paid off for him politically. But, you know, there are people who've taken the chance and said, no, it's not something they want to do, like Adam Kinzinger, for example, Liz Cheney, for example, Peter Meyer. And then they find themselves on the outs, not just of the party, but maybe not even in power anymore. And I think it's a really difficult balance for a lot of them to decide what is it that they're going to do to decide how they're going to get there. You know, the country's gone through a lot of different iterations at a lot of different times, and a lot of times when you go back and look at the history of how a law became something or an amendment became in place, it's really messy. It's actually not really done in a, you know, clean way where we look back and say, yeah, these people were kings and queens essentially and knew how what they were doing in such honorable, noble ways. A lot of times a lot of horse trading that looks really dirty and the sausage making doesn't look great, except with the shine of history. So, you know, if there's any hope going forward, it's that sometimes history is messy in the American political system.
We've got about 5 minutes left in our conversation, and we're talking with Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor at NPR. I want to talk about abortion for Democrats as an issue and crime for and the economy for Republicans. I mean, how do you think those two are either benefiting or hurting each party?
Well, I think you nailed the issues that they're using in these midterms to close things out, for sure. You know, Democrats clearly saw an uptick in enthusiasm, quite a significant uptick in enthusiasm, after the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court, which overturned Roe and guaranteed the right to an abortion in this country. And, you know, that I think shook a lot of people, a lot of women in particular, who said that, you know, this is not, you know, the kind of country that they wanted to be on, the path that they wanted to be on. And the polling, you know, supports that Democrats' view that people didn't want Roe to be overturned. You know, some two-thirds of the country didn't want Roe overturned. A good degree of people in the country also support a degree of restrictions on abortion rights. But the Supreme Court sort of went further than that and I think had some people thinking there could be other rights that would be at stake. And I think that what that's done is to float both boats of both parties and that we could be headed for a record midterm turnout for an election, for a midterm election. You know, we've seen that in our surveys where enthusiasm is up overall, and certainly Democrats are using abortion rights and in a lot of their closing ads in a lot of these states to remind voters of the stakes there. Now, of course, inflation continues to be the top concern for most people, for Republicans and independents, certainly the top issue, and that pinch at the, you know, that people are feeling when it comes to prices is a real kitchen table issue. It's difficult and it's hard for people. And Republicans are using sort of the same message across the country with a lot of their congressional candidates to blame Democrats for, you know, for inflation due to, you know, it's arguable whether or not the spending from some of the early COVID relief packages that Democrats helped pass, whether that really contributed as much as Republicans are saying, or if they have solutions to it that are real solutions that can be tangible fixes. But, you know, nevertheless, presidents wind up getting more blame than necessary on the economy and more credit for it as well. So that's just a situation where it's going to be. And President Biden's approval ratings, you know, our last survey had it at 44%, which is an improvement over the 36% in July, which is really a terrible number. And a lot of Democratic strategists were telling me they were concerned that they didn't think that their candidates could really overperform our Democratic president's numbers that were that bad, especially in a president's first midterm election, which are historically generally bad for the party in power.
One more text message, and we got about a minute left, Domenico. Why is so much time, news time, devoted to polling? Wooden polls are so little use to ordinary voters and citizens. What is the value of to the public within a news program when you talk about polls?
Well, you know, we don't actually pay much attention or do any horse race polling anymore. We're not looking at like who's up, who's down. I think it's one element. It's not everything. It's one element of where a race stands, how candidates are doing. Campaigns pay attention to them. Campaigns conduct them. They spend money. There's reporting to do on the ground. So we look at all of those things more holistically, including reporting with them. But when you look at polls for attitudes, attitudinal shifts are a really important thing. And if it weren't for, you know, rigorously conducted American survey research, we wouldn't know, for example, how quickly things changed, how people's views changed on gay rights. We wouldn't know how quickly people's views changed on marijuana laws, for example. There are a lot of things, attitudinal shifts that we've seen that are really because of polling that have really given us a better view of the country. I do think that people need to be careful about looking at polls very specifically, like 1 or 2 point changes here or there make a difference. They really don't. There's margins of error. People need to take that in and look at trends.
Well, it has been a pleasure having you with us, and the time flies, doesn't it? We've been talking with Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington, D.C. desk. Tonight, he'll take part in a symposium with political journalists from CNN, The Wall Street Journal, and the Chicago Tribune. It starts at 6 at the Spurlock Museum on the U of I Urbana campus, and you can also get a link at 21stshow.org. if you want to watch it virtually. Thank you for spending time with us, Domenico.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Coming up, we'll talk to a former journalist and former head of Disney Studios who helped make that political symposium possible. And his wife is a former TV reporter. We'll also talk about their gift to help journalism students in Illinois. Stay tuned here on The 21st Show.